Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's go back to the Stars. We will get to the Mavs as well. And in this hour, I know it's normally in the noon hour, we will do our Nelly ticket giveaway in this hour, all right? And so what I want to know is not necessarily your prediction changed, but has your perception of the series changed? Because it's just one game, so if not, I totally get that. But I think that the Stars can hang physically better in this series than I thought. Oh. And part of the credit for that goes to Colorado. Like, we were talking about off air how, like, the team hit numbers don't always match up with, I think, what was the actual physicality and flow of the game. I saw that at least twice in the Colorado series. But I think one thing you did take away from the Colorado series is you got to step up or you're going to get dusted in this series, man.
Yeah, and they definitely did that. Set that tone last night. And that's I use the Shorzy line all the time, but set the tone definitely does create the environment that you want for the game. And last night, I think DeBoer told the guys, look, Winnipeg did just play that double overtime game. They had less time to prepare for this.
Yeah.
We're ready. We got fresh legs. In this first period, go downhill at them and do not stop. Kevin, I still need to go find it, time spent in zone, because it felt like we dominated that, especially in the first period last night. So that was the thing for me, was seeing them start with that fast pace, going at it, pushing into their zone. And they had the other thing, Kevin, that the Stars had, crisp passing. Their passes last night to start the game, that we saw that early in the Colorado series. They just looked all over the place. And last night they said this crisp passing is going to be a key for us. But that tempo that they set right out of the gate, I thought that was the most important part for the series.
So another thing.
But yes, it has. I've already changed my mind on the series. Like I said earlier, I don't think they will be beaten by Winnipeg. They will only beat themselves in this series.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Alec. What was your pregame one prediction for the series?
I said Stars in six.
Okay,
same.
And so I had the Stars in six as well. I don't think I'm going to change that prediction, but I will say I feel maybe a little bit more comfortable because we won game one.
Oh, you're going to go to Choppy's Stars and four?
No, I'm going to stick with six, but I feel more comfortable because we've seen the Stars like come back from 0-1, 0-1, 0-1. And then the other thing last night that really stood out to me is the special teams. And that is something that I feel like could be the Stars' calling card for the cup. So look at it last night. Was there a penalty that I thought was complete and utter BS? Yes. Yes, there was, but it doesn't matter because the Stars killed it off. They were 4-for-4 on the penalty kill. Thus far in the playoffs, they've given up 3 goals in 26 penalty kill opportunities. That means they shut it down 88% of the time. That's good for third in the NHL, in the NHL playoffs. And keep in mind, you just played the greatest power play unit on the face of planet Earth, and you're still in that position. Then on the flip side, the Dallas Stars' first power play attempt of the game, what happened? They scored another goal. Actually, you know what? Go ahead and give me, if you can, Alec, cut number 5, because this is how it happened, and this was off the Stars' first power play of the night.
Duchesne, nice job. Sends it across. Rantanen in front. Score! Rantanen again!
It's a hat trick in Winnipeg. Hintz was right in front, but it's Rantanen who remains scorching hot. That man is out of his mind.
Did he say out in front? Yes, he might have, but you don't care because the goal counted. But my point about that is on the power play, 8 for 25. That's a 32% conversion rate right there. Just think about it. If you go above 100, that means you're doing better than average. And so 32% at the power play conversion, 88% at the kill. That's 120%. They're third in both categories. That is something that you can ride a long way in this playoff.
You know, something that Broadus brought up in the last series early. There were a couple games that the Stars lost, and he was like, did we even win a faceoff last night? And last night, the Stars won 38-32.
And Roope was a big part of that.
But late in the game, it felt like the Jets kept winning over and over. And I was like, man, how are we going to ever get back to this? But that is something that we, you know, we're pretty strong and feel pretty strong about, is their ability to win those faceoffs and get control of the puck.
Can I ask you a question about that? Do you ever get irrational about losing a faceoff? Because when we have a one-goal lead, especially when it's in our own end, losing a faceoff turns into missing a free throw for me.
Okay.
I'm like, how do you lose a how do you miss a free throw? And I know the percentages are way different, but I don't know. Do you guys ever fall into that trap in a close game? You're like, how do you lose a faceoff?
No, yeah. And like I always told you, like, make 100% of your free throw. So I know exactly what you're saying. Kevin, there was a play that both you and I, like, this morning whenever we came in, we celebrated together. And I'm getting chills just thinking about the moment. And that was Esa Lindell's skate.
Holy freaking moly,
dude,
man.
His skate was the last line of defense as Otter kind of got turned around and is laying on the ground and everybody's scrambling. And what a scramble that was. And that's what we're talking about, the intensity of those final moments. But here's a line from Bruce Levine. There's a reason Jim Nill made signing Esa Lindell to a contract extension a top priority. Stars PK, 4 for 4 last night. 7 minutes and 41 shorthanded. Lindell chewed up 654 on the PK.
Wow.
He also led all players with 7 block shots, including a late one in the crease that saved the game. So as much as we've been giving Harley this credit to,
and
Lindell deserves, and Lindell did the same thing in the Colorado series, didn't he?
Yes. And by the way, you're so right about Esa Lindell. I do want to shout out Thomas Harley, though, because I think he's done a really good job, even beyond the blue line, of maybe kind of deconstructing some potential offensive opportunities.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Throughout the playoffs.
I feel very calm knowing he's on the ice.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I feel very, when I see him on the ice, I'm like, it just seems like everything's controlled.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of panic.
That makes sense to me. You mentioned Esa Lindell. I went back and watched it a couple of times, and maybe people can give me a better idea. It looked like there was a chance that Ottinger had moved back into position and could have maybe stopped that puck before it went across the line. But thank God we didn't need to.
The fact that his skate landed there, it stopped it first.
And I don't, by no means am I saying, oh, he would have got it for sure. Because I just looked at it. Thank goodness that Esa Lindell was there to go ahead and shut it down. And like you said, he did that very same thing in the first series. And here's a great thing about this team. I want you to think about, go back to the first segment. And then think about the segment that we've just done. Who have we not mentioned whatsoever?
Wyatt.
Well, that's another one. Now, that just made me feel even better. We didn't even mention that Jason Robertson is back.
Right. I was just about to bring that up. Yep.
And we haven't mentioned Miro.
Yep.
Because he didn't play.
Our defense has been pretty stout, man.
But you're right. You think about, now, obviously, everything has turned into the Mikko Rantanen show. I'm sure he's like a 1 to 1 million to win the Conn Smythe now if they go all the way. But like, outside of that, Wyatt Johnston is the dude. Haven't mentioned him yet. Jason Robertson just came back. Didn't mention him yet. Miro, still not back. This team has an incredible amount of depth.
Let's talk a little bit about Robertson real quick.
Okay.
Last night, he looked like he was getting his feet back under him.
And, that's fair.
And granted, with the Miro injury, Miro needed surgery. And Miro has not played in a long time. So conditioning is definitely another thing they're keeping track of. Because, Kevin, if you're not in game shape, you risk the opportunity to go back out there and injure it even again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the fact that he needed surgery and the fact that he's had to get back into game shape while not playing, Robertson got injured late in the season, didn't need surgery, played just recently. And so that's one of the reasons you saw Robertson come back faster, was because he's in shape. He's been playing all the way up until the last moment of this season, so he's in better shape. But he did have moments last night where that moment when he slid into the wall and it was face first in the wall, I was like, oh, dang, is he okay?
And you got to attribute at least part of that to something that we talked about yesterday to be prepared for this, is the line shifts, right? Mm-hmm. Because he ended up pairing up with Marchment and Johnston, and that's a line you have not seen. And so it makes sense that, like, he personally and the line in general would have a little bit of a learning curve, I guess.
And for, you know, that's the great thing about the depth of this roster. That DeBoer has this opportunity for each series, hell, even each game, he has a chance to go, oh, you know what, I like this matchup a little more, and, you know, move this guy to this scoring line. And but that front line that he's working with right now, he's so comfortable with it, and he's like, that's the one I'm really confident in. And the whole team is like, hey, we'd like to get them back out on the ice and get some goals in there
for sure. Confidence level, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow, confidence level now heading into game two.
Heading confidence for the series, I still feel like they're winning.
Okay.
Winning
confidence
game two,
strictly on game two.
I have concerns, because it's so easy to go steal. Not so easy, but it's easy to go steal the first game and then be like, we did what we were supposed to do, instead of don't take your foot off the pedal. Now, I think because of the way that the Stars learned from the Colorado series, I think they will not take their foot off the pedal. But DeBoer also loves to see what your tweaks are going to be.
Sure.
So, like, he's probably going to say, let's go back out there, same plan. Once they adjust, we'll adjust when we get back home. So that's where I'm kind of, you're asking.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
My confidence, I have full faith that this series is the Stars.
Okay.
But game two, it's very easy sometimes to kind of just take a load off, if you will.
Now, I want to go back to Mikko Rantanen.
I will also say, Kevin, I'm so tired of hearing about Connor Hellebuyck. And I just wish they would stop talking about him. Dude, they talked about him like he was God last night. And I was like, what is this chump out here doing right now?
Well,
would his eyes go back and forth for training before the game? Whatever.
And I did like that you got a little, you got like the most Canadian version of trash talk when they were chanting Helly's backup. And I'm like, well, hey, a couple things. First of all, you didn't win Four Nations. And second of all, your goalie got pulled 3 times in the first round.
Did you see the dude that was holding up the sign that said Cowboys can't skate? And I was like, man, that's a really good Canadian burn right there.
It really is. Like, if you ever go back and watch UFC, George St. Pierre, he came out after a Matt Hughes performance and he got in the octagon and they were clearly trying to hype it up. And he was like, I just want to say I was not impressed with your performance. And like, to him, it felt like, hey, MF-er, I just stomped all over you and everybody you've ever loved. It's just that was the most hardcore he could get into it. And that was kind of the same thing that you saw. But back to Mikko Rantanen. Do you want to hear from Mikko or Coach?
Let's hear from Coach.
All right. Give me cut number 6. I'm going to paraphrase the question. Hey, how badass is Mikko?
Keep it going. Let's see how long he can run this for. He's rolling, you know, and he's feeling it. And pretty impressive what he's doing. I mean, considering the opponent and the time of year and, you know, how he's dominating games, really impressive. So, you know, and I think it's the first time we've won a game one since 2019.
Yes.
I thought our group did a lot of good stuff. I mean, Otter made some huge saves down the stretch. PK was outstanding. Got a power play goal. Special teams, again, were great. So there's a lot of things there for us to build on.
Now, let's go to Mikko, cut number 7. Have you ever felt this good in the playoffs before?
I don't think so. No, it's been good last couple of games, you know, and obviously have to thank the line mates, teammates are making great plays around me and finding me in the net front or wherever it is. And we'll just try to keep it going now.
So everything is going well for the Stars at the moment. Things are not going as perfectly for the Mavs.
Oh, because of that shot that Sean took at him?
I wasn't going to say that.
He said it this morning. I was listening to their show.
Yeah, no, that is that is very true. He'll just say.
He says things.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And you know what? Was he wrong?
No, look, when he retold that story, I think that is an accurate way to put it. All right, so the Dallas Mavericks went ahead and moved on from Deon Calhoun. That was their head athletic trainer. And look, we've talked about it. Tim McMahon clearly has a vendetta because of Nico blowing off one of his questions.
He's tight with the medical staff.
Okay.
He's tight with Casey Smith. That's what I'm feeling based on this entire thing, is they found out too that he was talking to them and they were like, you got to get out of here, buddy.
Well, and part of the thing, it goes back to, you know, Tim McMahon asking like, hey, how in the world did Derek Lively almost play when he had like a catastrophic stress fracture in his foot? And then Nico goes, it actually shows the strength of our medical team. But then, like, looking at Tim, he goes, so, you know, you'll take the angle of being negative, but it's actually a positive thing because they saw the symptoms, blah, blah, blah. We love our medical staff and whatnot. And this was like a month ago. This was not even a month ago that we, like, got a lot more of these details. Well, 22 days later, fired.
What does this say about Nico? That he doesn't have a clue what he's doing, or that he's cleaned house?
Well,
and
I'm going to read you this quote and you answer that question for me. We feel that the guys that replace them have done an amazing job. And again, you're coming at me from a negative standpoint, and I look at it from a positive standpoint. The guys we brought in are better. That was 22 days ago. And then, fire.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It just seems like it's a continual avalanche of bad things that are going his way.
Yeah.
And Dumont is just kind of like, I mean, I don't know what to do. I put this dude in control.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like it's falling apart more and more for him.
Yeah. Like, I just, at some point, I at least appreciated that he stuck with like, hey, we made these moves because they're going to make it better at basketball. I know it infuriated people, but at least I was like, you stuck with it. It just 3 weeks ago, he was lecturing people about how we brought in the better people. And then he was like, but you got to go.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess not better enough. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, one down, one to go. What position or player would you like to see the Cowboys go after next? We will do that next right here on The Fan. Could it be Perelin? Could it be Tagle that is the next Pope? Could there be an upset?
I'm just going to, whatever
like Pizzaballa? Don't know.
The fact that Broadus knew every one of the
He was invested. He was invested. Perhaps even Zuppi. We'll see. The white smoke is out. We have a new Pope. But I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Unless you guys are like super invested in Pope talk, I feel like we can save that for another time. All right. One down, one to go. I want to start with this question. Then we're probably going to go a few different directions.
Right.
So before the draft, Cowboys owner and GM Jerry Jones said, hey, they're working on multiple moves, specifically two pretty substantive moves. So we saw the one with George Pickens that we thought might happen before the draft. It didn't, but now we've seen it. Is there a player, a reasonable player, or position that you would like to see the Cowboys go after? Because I know Gavin Dawson talked about left tackle. Brian Broaddus, we asked him, and he said perhaps, I think, if I remember correctly, perhaps cornerback is somewhere that you would want to look. So I'm curious if there's a position or player you're looking at.
Yeah, I think Mishota said that yesterday, too, while he was on with this.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Well, no, I think Broaddus did as well. Okay. But he said the Stephon Gilmore thing he thinks has more legs than the Cowboys are letting on. And I like Jerry being coy with that when he was asked about, hey, why was Stephon Gilmore here? And he's like, I like to think that every player who's ever been here before likes to come by and see our facilities from time to time.
That's definitely what he thinks in real life too, right?
Mm, yes.
Like, I know he was just saying that for spin. That's what he thinks.
And granted, A lot of them do. They feel at home.
Yeah.
You know, they feel very comfortable, very at home. I know Gavin is in two different boats on the left tackle position. He's in one boat where he's like, I'm out on the dude I saw last year.
Yeah.
He's in the other boat of, I'm going to give that dude a chance, but the leash isn't very long.
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's kind of where I am still. I want to see Tyler Booker play before I just, you know, go, okay, we're good there. I feel pretty confident, but left tackle is definitely a spot where, okay, you got these wide receivers. Do you have time for Dak to be back there to throw? And you know, obviously Dak has to be willing to pull the trigger on throws as well. So left tackle is definitely a spot. I'm still not completely confident in the linebacker situation right now.
Okay.
But I also have a lot of faith in Eberflus when it comes to linebackers. But right now, Kevin, your starter at will is Leafau. You got Kenneth Murray, Jack Sanborn. These are names that I just don't. I know you feel
maybe Sanborn, yeah.
But Sanborn was a name that I got thrown my way, and they were like, he's perfect for Eberflus's system.
Yeah.
And then he comes to Dallas from Chicago where Eberflus was. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is nice to know. But there are a lot of names there. So not necessarily that I want him to go get it. I just want to see somebody stand out in whenever it comes training camp time.
Yeah.
Because until Overshown comes back, and who knows when that's going to be, and who knows how long he'll be back.
Yes.
Until that happens, though, I'm not completely comfortable with that position.
I want to make this clear. I love DeMarvion Overshown as a person, as a player. I just don't see him having a legitimate impact this season.
Yeah. And right now,
I'm sorry, I just don't.
Right now, I feel like you have bodies. You have a lot of bodies for the position and whoever stands out. But, man, you really need the dudes up front in front of them doing their job so that those linebackers can be at their best. You need Mazi and Osa and those guys being at their best.
Now, you mentioned this just a minute ago, and this was originally going to be an NFL overreaction or reality question. But I want to throw this out for both you and Alec. Do you believe, now that Dak has sufficient offensive firepower,
do I believe he can
it? Does he have the weapons?
Oh.
Because I know sometimes that's a complaint. People are like, well, what's he supposed to do? He's got CD and nothing.
Okay, all right. Real quick. Who's the third receiver? Tolbert?
Yeah, I guess Tolbert, then Mingo and Turpin.
And, okay. Now, Turpin's an interesting concept because I have no clue what Schottenheimer wants to do with him. I know what he's capable of, and I know how I would use him, and I would probably use him over Tolbert for in a lot of these runs. And I have no clue what Mingo is. Like, he didn't prove anything to me. So, at the moment, I think he has two really good receivers, and it's going to be, man, the people up in Pittsburgh, they have lots to say about Pickens, and I'm a little more concerned than I think I was.
Look, Mike Tomlin said there's no question he has to grow up. Mike Tomlin was able to keep the Antonio Brown stuff under wraps. So if he's stepping
think about all the number one wide receivers that have come out of Pittsburgh because Mike Tomlin was like, I don't know, just move on from these guys. Somebody said he's got 23rd wide receivers, Corey. Or does he have 24th wide receivers? And that's kind of where I am there. But I think he has two stud. One, Isaiah Stanback said he's got 1A, 1B in CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. So, and I'll take a former wide receiver's word for that. And Stanback I trust a lot. So I appreciate that. As long as Ferguson is back, yes. I don't have complete faith in the running game yet.
Sure.
So I still feel like we're missing that component until I see how Dak works with Jaden Blue, until I see how he works with Javonte Williams and whatever they're doing there. But I think he's got everything he needs, maybe a better third wide receiver, but those guys are going to be fighting for it. You pointed out yesterday how difficult it's going to be at the receiver position.
Alec, do you believe sufficient offensive weaponry is in place for Dak?
I think he's got enough to have some fireworks, but I don't know if he has a running back yet.
Yeah.
No, and
I'm with you on that.
My expectations for Jake Ferguson seem to go down each year now.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a good thing. Maybe he does have a baller year, and I'm like, oh, whoa. You know, he ended up producing a lot more than I expected. So I'd say he has ample weapons, but sufficient to make any kind of run. I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
And maybe on how we feel about Ferguson, maybe Schoonmaker takes that next step. Span Ford, really good receiving tight end. So yeah. there is some love there, and that's where camp's going to be a lot of fun.
So it's funny because if we would have talked about the Jake Ferguson heading into last season, I think I would have been like thumbs up. But Jake Ferguson, he regressed.
Dude, I was thinking that Jake Ferguson was going to be a top five fantasy tight end.
Yeah.
Out there last year.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to bring that up is CBS has its grouping of the top 10 wide receiver tandems in the NFL,
like
including now that Dallas has made their move. So it goes Jacksonville at 10 with Thomas and Hunter. Tampa at 9 with Evans and Godwin. Then we get the Commanders with McLaurin and Debo. Tyreek and Waddle are only number 7 for the Dolphins. And then the Rams with Devontae and Puka. And this is what is interesting to me. They have the Dallas Cowboys all the way up at 4.
Oh, really?
So the Cowboys with CeeDee and George Pickens. And I'm sure lots of people have lots of thoughts, but that goes ahead of Jameson Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown. That goes ahead of, like I said, Devontae and Puka. That goes ahead of Waddle and Hill. Like, those are some heavy-hitting duos. How much CBS is like, these are better.
How much credit do you give Dak for that, too? Because, I mean, with the Minnesota Vikings being at 3, that's all the receivers right now.
For sure.
That's all on those guys.
For sure.
With the Bengals, Joe Burrow has a lot to do with that.
I know.
With the Eagles, they made Jalen Hurts look better, but he was really good last year, too.
It's tough because, like, I think, and I know people still try to pigeonhole him in as he's like, oh, he can't be a number one because he's a slot receiver, which I think is madness. I think CeeDee Lamb is that dude. Like, I think you can put whoever at quarterback,
I'm with you, man,
and he's still going to be getting work done. Now, maybe to varying degrees. But, so, I mean, I give Dak some credit.
Okay. All right.
But I think CeeDee Lamb is the dude.
Yeah, when you're just looking at pure talent, and you look at the raw talent of it all,
yeah,
that's why CeeDee Lamb is as high as he is at that spot. I can put him up there with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase at 2.
Okay.
I think that A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith have proven that they're a number one combo.
Agreed.
Justin Jefferson, I think, is elite. Jordan Addison was fantastic last year. But I can definitely see them in the top 3, and I can make that argument with the talent. But we haven't seen the talent of George Pickens with Dak yet, so that's another thing I got to wait on.
And that is the top 3 with Minnesota at 3, Cincinnati at 2, and the Philadelphia Eagles at number 1. All right, I'm going to kind of replicate your answer about running back. Now, I heard what they were talking about this morning, like, the rumors of the Breece Hall trade. It's not that it didn't happen. It never was happening. And so that doesn't surprise me. You have brought up Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
As a fascinating potential choice. It feels like before they traded for Pickens, they have a whole bunch of number 2 running backs and they need a 1, just like they had a whole bunch of 3 wide receivers and they needed a 2.
Chubb has proven that he can be a 1 at times, but the injuries are obviously scary.
For sure.
And Javonte Williams looked like he was on the verge of being a 1, and then his injury obviously set him back a little bit. And I watched a lot of the Broncos last year because with their running back for fantasy purposes. Because Sean Payton gave us Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh, he knows how to run the football. And it was, I don't know how much of the credit I give to the offensive line, but it didn't look like Javonte Williams had a lot of cut in him. It looked like I'm going into the pile and I got to trust that the pile's going to be open up somewhere. And it never did. So it looked like a lot of 2-3 yard runs for him. And that was kind of frustrating. So I'm with you where I feel like, Maybe the blocking system for the Cowboys is going to be a little bit different and he's going to have more space. I hope that Blue has that ability to run free at times because we know how fast he can be. And that's a game breaker opportunity, but he's not an every down back for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do feel like you do have a bunch of number 2s, potential rookie number 3s. And you're sitting there going, all right, Dak, it's back to you being a throw first offense again. And I know they want to be able to run the ball at will.
For the KNC masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. And, you know, I feel like there's something we should...
Let's give something away!
877-881-1053. Caller number 10 will win a pair of tickets. You're going to go find out where the party at when Nelly comes to the Dos Equis Pavilion on September 5th. You can, of course, go buy tickets or you can win them for free right now. 877-881-1053. Coming up next, well, we're going to lead you into Rangers. So let's go ahead and look back and ahead at Rangers Red Sox next on The Fan.
Payoff pitch again. And there's a long drive to right. If it's fair, it's gone. It is hooking at the foul pole. It is gone. The second home run of the game for Willier Abreu. Man, does he kill the Rangers.
So just don't pitch to him is my suggestion. We're the KNC masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We got Rangers, Red Sox coming up next. So let's stick with some more Rangers talk here.
Kevin, we just actually real quick. This is Tolo talk. We just got a tweet from Tolo Craig. And he said, my wife draws a cartoon for kids every morning. This morning she asked me what we should draw. And without hesitation, I said moose named Miko. And she drew a little moose for the kids at her school. So getting them invested in what the Stars are doing.
That is freaking tremendous. Now, a couple of logistical things. Kevin Pillar put on the 10-day injured list. And then in his stead, Ezekiel Duran has been pulled up from AAA Round Rock. So just a couple of notes about roster shuffling right there.
It's interesting because yesterday you asked Bochy about kind of the center field position. Yep. And he was like, look, it was cluttered, you know, regarding Leody. And then the Pillar situation, I'm like, oh, hold on, was it as cluttered as we thought?
And by the way, and he told us yesterday, he's like, Evan Carter is going to get the lion's share of the work out there.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think they're going to give him every opportunity to prove he can't hit left-handed pitching. You know, just give him those chances, let him try. He's hitting, as long as he's hitting right-handed pitching well up here, we'll keep throwing him out there. And he gives us a good chance to walk, be patient, be in what the Boone philosophy might be. Now, Kevin, my question to and Sean made this point this morning, and I found myself doing it. I watched did you watch at bats last night and the last 2 days a little differently?
I did, but I might be looking for something different than you and maybe some other Rangers fans. So I don't want to take away any of your thunder, but one of the things I'm looking at is the chases. All right. So we talked about this.
Yeah.
The Texas Rangers, they have a 34% chase rate, the highest in Major League Baseball. It has been abysmal. All right. So no team is chasing more this year when swinging than the Texas Rangers. You can break that down however statistically you want. It's going to be the Rangers, the Rangers, the Rangers every single time. And you've seen Adolis even reaching more than he normally does. You've seen Wyatt reaching. And so for me, I'm going to be locked in on where are you making your swings? Like, are you making smart swings, not from a contact point of view, but from a, dude, come on. That was clearly a ball.
No, yeah. And,
you know?
Yeah. And I'm looking at Josh Young, 31.4%. That is not, there's nothing. Listen, Josh Young had a great game last night.
I don't know. I heard you yesterday. Alec, you heard him yesterday, right?
The best version of Josh Young, Alec, I promise. 31, though. Jake Berger was at 36. Those are significant. And let's drop that number down to 25. That's Jonah Heim, who's having a pretty good year right now.
Yeah.
Because he is being disciplined at the plate. Jared was just talking to us about Alex Bregman's discipline at the plate. He gets up there. He's waiting for a pitch that he knows he can drive, and that's why he's a good hitter. And the Rangers, I don't know if they just felt, hey, we won the World Series. Anything we swing at's going out. You know,
it looks like that sometimes.
And maybe that idea, that concept of home runs are the thing that drives this team. We're a home run hitting team. Sometimes you do need to go back to the basics and really tighten that strike zone so you aren't chasing. So that's I'm looking at that same thing because the chase, Kevin, would be against what Brett Boone wants.
Okay.
And so that's why I'm watching with an idea of you're up there, if you have two strikes, you're battling to foul balls off until you get your pitch. And you get something that you can put in play and either get on, move a runner over. There's lots of ways to move runners around the bases, and it's not just by hitting a home run. This team can.
Sure.
Dude, Wyatt Langford's home run last night. good. Or no, Josh Young's. Josh Young's was a monster last night.
What a shocker.
Night.
You didn't want to give credit to Josh Young for that home run.
Josh Young's, like, I felt like that thing was going to go forever. Like, that was an amazing home run, but not every one of those pitches is going to be a home run pitch, and I think they kind of need to reduce that back just a little bit.
Was the most entertaining of them all, though, the Adolis...
Yes.
Carl Yastrzemski.
Carlton Fisk.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Keep it fair. Except he just stayed on his knee and watched
it. He rips it down the third baseline, and he squats down into, it's a position that everybody's using now to like stretch their hamstrings and groin. I see it on TikTok all the time now. And he's sitting there.
Your groin.
And so he's sitting there looking, and he's watching, and he's like, please stay fair. That thing hit the outside of the foul pole. Like, it didn't even hit the inside of the foul pole. It hit the outside of the foul pole and gave us a home run. And yes, that was an awesome, exciting home run as well. But again, I'm watching them with a mind of, okay, how are they approaching their at-bats now? And they do look like there's, last night, four innings in, Hawks 75 pitches in. That's so much better than a four innings in and your opposing pitcher's 35 pitches in, and you have no chance to get their bullpen anytime soon except for in high leverage situations.
Because you know what? What happens if you don't fix things up? You get fired. Alec, is it true that the Pittsburgh Pirates have fired their manager even though they don't really care to spend any money? Right?
This is true, and I guess we're getting a Pope news dump because everybody's talking about that. So they said, "Huh, let's slide under the radar here." But
I can see that.
I can totally see it because Derek Shelton has been fired following a 12-26 start that has them in last place of the National League Central. So, yep, bye-bye Derek Shelton. Paul Skeens is probably happy at this point.
I mean, maybe, but I also feel like Paul Skeens is like, hey, we got a good team. Why don't you do something to upgrade our team?
Yeah, but money.
I mean...
We don't want to spend it, Kevin.
Okay, that's great.
We're the Pirates.
That's fine. Don't spend the money to re-sign Paul Skeens.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you have one of the best pitchers in baseball, except against the Cardinals, and you have him for almost nothing. Mm-hmm. So spend some more money on your team. By the way, speaking of spending money on the team, I don't know if you saw this article or if you think this is inevitable, but I thought about it when somebody was like, hey, let's lock up Wyatt Langford already. Did you see the article from Jeff Passan that predicted like all the next benchmark contracts, 100, 200 million and so on and so forth? So at 600 million, Gunnar Henderson is on the list. He says, I see potential for Gunnar Henderson to get $600 million. On the $300 million level, so luckily we're going to go quite a bit down, Wyatt Langford. So Langford's barely scratched the surfaces of his abilities last year, and he had a 4 WAR.
Okay.
It feels like he's progressing this year. He's been a bright spot in just a horrific offense. And so he'll head to free agency right after he turns 28.
Okay.
So.
That seems old.
Huh.
Free agency at 28 just seems like a long way away. But I guess college did kind of put him back a little bit.
Yeah, and that'll be right in prime earning time. Could you see Wyatt Langford eventually getting a $300 million deal?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, with the way that he's growing into it, as much as people talk about the sound of that bat, I know, Kevin, you don't care for that much, but like it just means he's finding the sweet spot, dude. It just means he's finding the right spot on the bat, and that WAR, I think, is going to continue to go up. And, dude, now watch him defensively. Dude, that throw from outfield last night almost got it.
Yeah.
If Marcus Semien had made a better tag there, and I'm not, that was a tough play.
Sure.
But like that, his arm is amazing. So he's a very valuable player to any team. He's got all five of the tools.
Now, Passan also mentioned the potential for Adolis Garcia as a $100 million player. I think you've seen that fly out the window. Mm. But I wanted to go through the rest of the people above Wyatt. So Wyatt's in the group with Jackson Chourio and James Wood. The potential for $400 million contracts, Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens. I don't know where he'll get that money from, but certainly not the Pirates. And then $500 million, Kyle Tucker, Ellie De La Cruz, and then I told you the lone representative at $600 million is Gunnar Henderson. We have Rangers, Red Sox tonight, Jack Leiter on the bump. Aside from, like, you'd love for them to win, what do you want to see from him and what will constitute as quality pitching for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I absolutely want to see him get ahead in the count immediately. Somebody said something. I want to see him get ahead of the count, and then I want to see him follow that up with the ability to shut somebody down once he's been ahead in the count. And if he gets into any trouble, man, trust your defense. Trust that you can make pitches that are going to put your defense in the best, you in the best position to get your defense the ball so that they can make plays for you. And I need to see less runs. Like, he was just getting battered in the last game. And the game before that, he got hit pretty hard too. So
what I'm hearing is don't pitch to Abreu. That's what I just heard. Alex, that's what you heard, right? Don't pitch to Abreu. And I think I saw the text that you're talking about. I want to remind that particular individual that Jeff Passan, not us, is the person who wrote that article, including Wyatt Langford, where he said, if you look ahead at the next 5 years of free agents, Wyatt Langford on that list is number 5. All right? Not us, Jeff Passan. Coming up next, it is indeed Rangers Red Sox right here on your home of the Texas Rangers. 12:35 first pitch pregame starts in just a few minutes. We will be back tomorrow. KNC Masterpiece. Corey, you get a full 4-hour show. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Say go Josh Young, Kevin.
Go Josh Young.